Standing too soon, shoulders high. You're listening to Revolution Rock here on CJAM 99.1 FM in the Windsor, Detroit area. I'm your host, Dave Constantino, joined by Adam Palche, and we're syndicating across several different stations in Canada as well. Thanks to those stations and CJAM FM for always supporting this show. We're doing this thing where we're playing an album in full to celebrate its 40th anniversary. The album, REM's debut, Murmur.
You know, Murmur is a very appropriate title, and I feel like this is the joke everyone makes about this record, because Michael Stipe's vocals are mixed very low on this record, and he doesn't really enunciate traditionally. Like, some would even say he mumbles on this record.
He would say that.
Yeah, and, you know, while some argued that was a fault of the record, I thought that was actually a strength. It made the lyrics that much more cryptic. It made it much more seeming like he was summoning an incantation rather than actually just saying a sentence. And as I said from the get-go, I feel like there's an impressionistic sort of element for this record where it's not just him singing a song about a very clear subject matter, but more this cascade of feelings or ideas that are being presented, and you kind of make up a story or you just have a reaction to them.
Yeah, and we ended off with the end of the track that would end side A on the vinyl, Perfect Circle, and this one's a ballad, and it kind of shows some of the more poppy stuff that the band would do later on in their career.
A ballad, and yet also at the same time, hard to argue that it's a love song. I mean, really, like so many of the other tracks on this record, it's more mystical in nature and is more almost, I guess you could say, a reflection, a pensive look upon nature and the cycles of life. Yeah, because one thing, REM didn't really write love songs.
Not really.
In spite of a lot of people misinterpreting certain songs of theirs as love songs, they really didn't make too many of them. Yeah, Perfect Circle, a fantastic song, and really, I think, something that changed the course of what underground music could be perceived as. Prior to that, we heard a version of Moral Kiosk that they recorded live in Holland in 1987. You can find that off the 25th anniversary edition of their album Document. What a great version. And as we did mention, though, the vocals were pretty high in that compared to what we heard on the album version of that track.
Yes, and well, that's a live recording. And then we heard a demo version of the song Laughing.
Oh, actually, there was a song before that we just missed.
Oh, sorry.
Talk About the Passion.
Sorry, I missed that. Yeah.
It's okay. And that continues on with a lot of these sort of mystical, almost spiritual themes that happen on this record. We did hear a demo version of Laughing before that. That's taken from the RCA demos, which, as you wouldn't too, that is a series of demos they recorded on a cassette while they were auditioning for different labels, including RCA.
Yeah, and they would pass it out to different labels, and I believe back then bands would have to provide something before even booking shows because they couldn't look them up on the internet because it didn't exist in the way it does now. And prior to Laughing, the demo version of Laughing, we heard another live track, this one actually live in Toronto.
Yeah, that was Pilgrimage, the second song, and what we're actually hearing in the background now from the album proper. If you like that version, you can find that off of the deluxe edition of Murmur that was released in 2008. That is taken from a live show in Toronto in 83. And we started things off with the opening track from the album and probably the best-known song from it, Radio Free Europe. As we mentioned, there's a lot of cryptic lyrics on this record. It's hard to say exactly what any individual song is about, but I think that's part of the charm of the album. In addition to that, there's, of course, the great jangly guitar work of Peter Buck and that melodic bass work by Mike Mills, who also opens up some great backing vocals for Stipe as well. Michael Stipe's voice, of course, kind of keening, kind of high, but with these very odd washes of melody. There really wasn't another vocalist like him at the time. That's something else to keep in mind. And a lot of people would try to, I would say, mimic and duplicate what he did, but no one really could duplicate what Stipe did, not without coming across as too keening or too, how should I say, too phony, for lack of a better term.
And we should also mention Bill Berry, of course, drummer, and he also came up with a lot of the music for the band. And one thing the band did do, though, is everyone was credited equally, and everyone had a say, which did cause many arguments amongst the band members throughout the years, because any one song can go a number of ways, especially when you have all these different influences. But they always kept it that way with the when they had the original lineup before Bill Berry left the group. And yeah, that's another thing that was unique. And we should also mention the actual recording of the album. We mentioned earlier how they wanted them to go with Stephen Hague. Didn't really work very well. So they actually went with Mitch Easter, who did a demo tape with them in 81.
Mm-hmm.
And also Don Dixon, who was an engineer. They both produced it together. And they also did a couple R.E.M. albums together, the early ones.
That's right, the first two. Now, Don Dixon's also known for his work with Smithereens, of course. And we should mention that Mitch Easter, in addition to working on R.E.M.'s follow-up record, Reckoning, he also worked with other bands like Game Theory, X-Teens. And down the road, he'd even produce something for Pavement. But with that said, we mentioned this Hogg potential album, which never saw the light of day, which never saw fruition. There's a reason why. And what we're going to do is we're actually going to play the demo track that Stephen Hogg recorded with the group. This comes from about 82 or 83, and it really shows you it's not bad. I'm going to say
No, it's actually pretty good, but
it's not what you would expect from REM, and I think they made a very wise choice in turning down Steven as a producer, but
they disliked it very much.
Yeah.
Lots of synthesizers you're going to hear, which you don't expect in REM. He tried to make them modern of the time.
He also provided his own vocals as backing vocals as well. That's something
all
else
without,
the band...
All without permission.
Without consent from the band. And as you mentioned, they were very democratic, and they wanted things done with their consent. So we're going to be playing side two, but with a twist, all different versions from demos, live versions, and some versions from the album proper as we celebrate 40 years of REM's Murmur here on Revolution Rock.